Most of you know that before Stephanie and I came out here, we lived in Indiana. We lived in a town of about 40,000 people, Richmond, Indiana, for about 3 years when I was at seminary. And during the period that we lived there for a while, there was a lawn sign that was pretty popular in some parts of town. And it was the Ten Commandments on one of those paper lawn signs on a wire frame. And the legend above it said, "Obey and display the Ten Commandments." Obey and display the Ten Commandments. There had been a controversy, I think, before we arrived, sometime a year or two earlier, about a monument displaying the Ten Commandments that was, it might have been on the courthouse lawn, or it was in the courthouse or something. I don't really remember, I don't know the whole story because I wasn't there. But as these things, as things happen in the United States, when a court decision is made that tries to uphold the First Amendment Establishment Clause and the separation of church and state, the monument was removed, or it was not approved to be built, or whatever exactly had happened. And so these lawn signs were sort of a reaction among those who had supported the monument. Well, if we can't display it on the courthouse lawn, I'm going to put it on my lawn, by gosh. And I sort of wondered, I didn't know any of the folks who put the Ten Commandments sign on their lawn, and so I didn't know anything about their lives or their reasons for putting it up there on their own lawns. So I wondered what kind of person wanted to obey and or display and obey, or obey and display. I think you were supposed to obey first, that was the idea, and then display. But I kind of wondered if it might be more important in some cases to display rather than to obey. I'm not sure that absolutely everybody who had that lawn sign never watched football on Sunday, for example, or might not look covetously at their neighbor's new car, etc. And when I say this, I'm not trying to hold myself back in any kind of superiority. The Ten Commandments are just as difficult for me to obey as they are for any other citizen of the United States. But the reason I bring this up was I had this sort of idle thought at the time, one of these beautiful plans that springs to your mind in a moment and then never gets any further than a beautiful plan, right? Some of you probably have this same inclination. I thought it might have saved the monument proponents, the obey and display folks, a little bit of money and resulted in a snappier sign if they had simply displayed what Jesus said was the first or the greatest commandment. Because if you're going to put all 10 of those commandments on a sign, the print is kind of small, right? So why not just put love God and love your neighbor as yourself? Bigger print, snappier sign, might even save some money. It would have been easier to read anyway. So that was my brilliant idea that never came to fruition, at least not there in Richmond, Indiana. I thought for a while about having some printed and offering them to whoever wanted them, but I never got around to it. I was in seminary. I can make any number of excuses. Nevertheless, there is this question: which commandment is the first and greatest? This was a live question in Jesus' day. This question, which of the 613 or some questions in, not questions. Let me start that sentence again. I got distracted. Is everything okay, Wendy? All right. This question was, which of the 613 some commandments, some positive, some negative, do this, don't do that there are in the Hebrew law, the Torah, which of those were the most important? This was something that was discussed quite a bit among rabbis, among teachers, among observant Jews in that day. The two that Jesus mentions here come from two different places in the scriptures. He kind of unites them, brings them together, but they come from the first, from Deuteronomy 6, in the part of the past, in a part of Deuteronomy that's very well known that begins in verse 4. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one," which the scribe stands up and recites in this passage from Mark. But it's Deuteronomy 6:5, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might, that Jesus lifts up as when the scribe says it, as part of the most important commandment, the first commandment. Among religious Jews in the day, this would have been a daily prayer. Everybody would have recited the Shema, beginning with Hear, O Israel, but continuing on to You shall love the Lord your God and some other commandments following it. So it was very well known. It was something that would have been on the lips of any Jew in the period. The second part, which is as important as the first, Jesus says, or Jesus affirms it being as important as the first, comes from Leviticus 19, the 18th verse. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So they come from two different places in the scriptures. But in some of the Jewish literature of the time, books and writings that came about in the period between the Testaments, after the Hebrew Bible, but before the Christian New Testament, we can see various of these commandments being lifted up as part of this overall discussion, which is the most important. Love of God, as one might expect, is always there. But love of neighbor shows up quite a bit. And then there's the question of how you apply this love of neighbor. Who is my neighbor? A familiar question, if you remember Luke's rendition of this passage, is a question that's answered various ways, depending on which writer and which community was being written for. For some, it's only the members of a particular sect of Judaism. Those are your neighbors. Those are your brothers and sisters. For others, it's everyone in the nation of Israel. And for some writers, even in this time, it extends to Gentiles as well. It's not just Jewish people, but it's also Gentiles. And there are various reasons for that, especially for Jews living in the diaspora, the Greek-speaking Jews outside of Palestine. It was important to treat your neighbors well, whether they were Jews or Gentiles, because you were part of a minority. And so that was an important part of living a harmonious and quiet life. So if these two show up prior to Jesus' time in various literature written between the Testaments, is there anything unique about what Jesus is saying here? I think there is, and I think it's the fact that he distills it down to these two commandments. Various of the other pieces of literature that you can look at, there are various other things mentioned. Keep yourself from impurity, or some of the negative commandments, keep yourself from this. But Jesus here affirms that there are two commandments that are together the most important commandment. And again, in Mark, he affirms what someone else is saying. In Matthew, he speaks the commandments himself. And in Matthew's rendition of this passage, he says, on these hang all the law and the prophets. Now, as it happens, someone did eventually make a greatest commandments yard sign. They executed my wonderful idea 10 years later, right? And most of you know that this was the Friends Committee on National Legislation, who recently have encouraged friends and others to post as sort of a public slogan, love thy neighbor, and in the parentheses, no exceptions, right? Various of you have seen these signs. Maybe not everyone, but there's been a good discussion here at our meeting about whether we should post one of these signs on the lawn out front in a public space so that it would be publicly visible. It's mostly been on email, so maybe not everyone has seen it. And I've been reading the responses, but I haven't really taken the time to respond myself. And a part of the question is this the right message? Love thy neighbor, no exceptions. Is this the right message? There's no question that FCNL feels that it's the right message at the present moment, when political discourse in the United States has marginalized a lot of people, who are our neighbors, certainly here in a cosmopolitan place like Berkeley, but who are our neighbors in many parts of the United States. part of why FCNL is encouraging people to post this sign is that it's a way of standing with the vulnerable. It's a way of saying there are no exceptions to our willingness to love, to protect, to stand with our neighbors, regardless of if they are Muslim, regardless of whether they are women or men, regardless of whether they are straight or gay. Part of the what's gone into this discussion, and part of the reservations that some of us have, is this can be a problematic message if we aren't really loving all of our neighbors, or if we don't feel love for all of our neighbors, or people who could be our neighbors. Can we harbor contempt for people and say with honesty that we love our neighbors? And this is a complicated question to answer, of course, but one of the things that we need to think about, I think, is what love is, and remember that love is not primarily about feeling or emotion. In today's society, with the preponderance of love songs on the radio, of course, that's what's been elevated about love. But especially if we remember the biblical witness of love and what the heart is, right? The heart in the Bible is not simply that part of us which feels, it's also that part of us that wills. It's also that part of us that chooses. And so much of what love is, especially from the biblical perspective, is the will, is willing ourselves to desire the good of another, to desire the good of a neighbor, or in some cases, to desire the good of an enemy. I want to say more about love of enemies at a later time. We don't have time for that today. So love is not primarily about how we feel about someone. It's about whether we're willing to desire their good and to work for their good, because love is not, more about the will than it's about feelings. It's also more about actions and specifics than it is about general warmth and fuzziness. You've heard me say this plenty of times before. Love of neighbor sounds great until you actually have to do it. It's very easy to make a kind of general fuzzy statement like, I love everyone, there's no one that I feel badly towards. But then we have to remember that love needs to translate into actions, and that's where it becomes difficult. I fail at this daily, friends. I fall short of this mark every day, just in case you think that I'm lecturing you on something you ought to be doing because I know how to do it. I fail at this daily. Most recently, Friday afternoon, after Jean had gotten the bulletin done and we were more or less done with that part of the day, a young woman came by around this side, on the Cedar Street side of the meeting house, and my office looks out onto Cedar Street. And she was probably not someone who has a home, or at least an itinerant person, and she probably had some emotional or mental difficulties. She was sort of talking to herself, and she was frustrated that the food pantry wasn't open yet. The food pantry opens about 2 p.m. on Fridays. And so I went out to talk to her and just explain, make sure she knew about the food pantry and make sure that she was able to come back at 2. When I had food in the fridge, and I probably could have just as easily said, do you want to come inside and I'll make you a cheese sandwich? It won't take very long. But instead, I sort of did the prescribed, here's the information that I can give you and that's all I can give you, which I do a fair amount. And then she went on her way. And I don't know if she made it back to the food pantry or not. Simply because I fail at this every day does not mean that it is not still God's will for me and for each of us. It doesn't mean that I shouldn't recommit my will to this every time I fail, repent of my failure, and seek to be guided more clearly and better by God's will the next time. So I guess I feel about this yard sign that it's a message that we need to represent in public because it is an important message for today. And it's an important message because it comes from the heart of what Jesus said being part of the kingdom of God was about. But also because it convicts us. If we make a public commitment, it convicts me. If it's out in front of the building that I spend a lot of time in, it's to represent to ourselves the importance of this commandment and to remind ourselves. Later in the Shema, in the Hear, O Israel prayer, it talks about remembering the words as you go in and go out. In the same way, I think a yard sign can serve that function. I want to say just a few things about the march yesterday that a lot of us participated in. Several, 9 or 10 of us from BFC or families related to BFC went to the Oakland March. Maybe some of you went elsewhere. I know John Winberg, who isn't here today, was at the San Francisco March. And the first thing that I noticed was I saw more mentions of love on signs at that march yesterday than I think I've ever seen at all of the various demonstrations that I've been to. And I haven't been to lots, but I've been to one every now and then. I saw more mentions of love on signs at this march yesterday than I have ever seen at any other public event that is organized around politics or political advocacy. Love trumps hate is the big slogan right now, and you know that's professional enough that you see it on t-shirts, but I saw plenty of other mentions like love will make America great again, right? So, and no doubt a lot of this is because this was a march planned by women for women and others to participate in, and many of the participants were women. Chalk it up to women to bring mention of love to the fore. And of course, we were carrying this banner, so this is the other part of the story if you don't know it, which is Louise went ahead and ordered the FCNL banner, which says, love thy neighbor, no exceptions, and it's 12 feet long and it's kind of hard to miss. And you need 6 people to carry it. And Louise and Fred had very nicely connected rope to the various grommets in the top of the banner so that we could put the string over our head, around our necks, and you just had to hold the banner straight with your hands. So we had a banner that also mentioned love, and a positive message, and a message that comes from the scriptures in the public square. And we had plenty of positive responses. A lot of people wanted to take pictures of it. A considerable number of people wanted to know who we were and where we were from, what FCNL is, who we were, where we were from. So that was a good opportunity to let people know that, you know, here are Quakers doing something in the public sphere. But it was also, it also connected to this theme of love that we don't always hear proclaimed in public. And I think that was very powerful. It was also an interesting experience to carry the banner itself, the experience of carrying the banner. And I don't think this is anything I've ever done in this kind of opportunity, and certainly not for 2.5 hours. That was the other thing about this march, is it was more like a shuffle. That there were so many people packed into the streets of Oakland that it was very difficult to proceed quickly. But carrying this 12-foot-long piece of cloth, presenting this message, is kind of cumbersome. It requires some choreography. You can't just walk at your own pace. You have to sort of watch the people on either side of you and make sure that the banner is being held more or less straight and more or less level, more or less. And that if you're turning, you know who's going to pivot and who's going to move, right? I'm sorry?
We had to get around
cars that were parked in the street because not everybody had moved their car off the march route. So, if we needed to move, the person on the left hand side, the person on the right hand side needed to say to the person on the left hand side, "We got to shuffle this way, right?" And you couldn't turn on a dime and still present the message coherently. You had to work with the people that were on either side of you. So this was an experience of being yoked, right? We each had a string around our necks, and we were engaged in a shared task. We were yoked together carrying this banner. And as we were walking along in that fashion, or shuffling, in, as the case may be, I thought of what Jesus said about his yoke. He says, remember, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And that opened that passage, that phrase of Jesus up in a new way to me. Because I was there engaged in carrying this common burden, yoked with five other friends. Living in the reign of God, participating in the reign of God, is an experience of being yoked. That's one of the metaphors that we can use to understand it. The burden is light because we are yoked with Christ. We are yoked together, each one of us, and we are also yoked with Christ, no longer carrying the burden by ourselves. When we exchange our priorities or the world's priorities for the priorities of the reign of God, we have also exchanged burdens. And the burden of the reign of God is much lighter than the burden of the world because it is a shared burden. The weight on our necks, the weight on our shoulders is transformed as our priorities are transformed, as we seek more and more to conform our will to the will of God, as we seek to love our neighbors as ourselves. It wouldn't have been possible for one person to carry that 12-foot-long piece of cloth and proclaim that message the way that we were able to do. It would have been pretty difficult for two or even three people to do it. So we needed the yoke to be able to proclaim the message. This is true of anything that we might proclaim as citizens of the reign of God. We must be yoked together with others to share the burden and to share the strength that comes from walking together. Let's take all of these things into a time of open worship, as Steve has already described for us.